The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Technique. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Your LSU headquarters here, Drift Bar in the Heights. Happy hour until 8. Coming up tonight, DJ Captain Kevlar Karaoke. Every Friday night, 9P to 2A. They have karaoke on Saturday. DJ Bobby Moe, 9P to 2A. Live music on Sundays from 3 to 7. Two pool tables. Guitar Hero, Cut to Win, Buck Hunter, Duck Locker, Claw Game. Two kind of pop and shot basketball games. Great spot to have a little happy hour drink. Great spot to hang out on your weekends.
What would be your game amongst all those mentioned on that list? What would be your go-to?
Probably pool.
Pool? See, for me, it'd be pop a shot.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't see you being very good at it.
Well, we will have a chance to play after the show's over.
I don't have time to hang around.
Yeah, of course. Convenient.
I don't have time to hang around. But this is where the Southern Coast meets a true Texas ice house. Next time we're here, we'll do it before the show.
There we go.
And
I think we're here like one Friday every month.
Blankers would probably take you the most. Now, Blankers wouldn't let you shoot on the Rockets goal. He'd make you shoot on the Spurs goal, and he'll shoot on the Rockets.
You know,
actually, maybe not.
Well, we were both employed by the team at one point, but he was employed for far, far longer, so I'd let him have the Rockets one. That's fine.
Do you think he would want to choose the Rockets goal or not choose the Rockets goal?
I think he's gotten over any bitterness, don't you?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm sure there was there some initially, but I think he seems like he's beyond that now.
Rookie of the Year odds, up to date, MGM. Jacob Wilson, minus 350 in the American League. Jason Dominguez, plus 900. Will Warren, plus 1200. Management told me I'll only say this player's last name. Kurtz at plus 220. Campbell at plus 2,500. Shane Smith plus 2,500. Matthew Lugo plus 2,500. And then you have three players, including Cam Smith at plus 3,000. So you think that Cam Smith has a decent chance, better than a plus 3,000 chance to win the AL Rookie of the Year. Now would be a good time to make a bet, to place a ticket.
Worth mentioning, we looked at some other books, notably, I think, DraftKings and FanDuel. And the odds for Cam Smith on those sites were much shorter. I think he was third highest on those boards.
What were the odds?
It was roughly the same. It was I'll pull the page back up here, but it was like plus 3,000. So DraftKings is plus 2,000, FanDuel plus 2,500.
So if you're going to play the bet, play it on BetMGM.
Yeah, for sure. You're getting much better return.
Yeah, but those are still decent odds, though, plus 2,000. Like,
if you
think he has a chance to win it, like, why not? 713-780-ESPN. Corey, you can't discount production on a bad baseball team. They're still hitting major league pitching. It's not like basketball where stats are inflated for an okay player on a bad team. You see that in football, too, in bad players. Like, they throw the ball more, rack up some stats.
Yeah, I think I would give a baseball player more credit than the other two sports, not only because of what you just mentioned, but if you're on a bad baseball team, you're the guy hitting, then wouldn't they be less likely to pitch to you?
Yeah.
In theory. So I think baseball players would get, to me, more credit than NBA or NFL players producing on a bad team.
Now, if you're down in games more often than other guys, though, you're probably going to see better pitches to hit.
Sure.
You'll get challenged more up down by five in the eighth inning against lower leverage relievers. But you're right. Like, if you're the dude on the team, like, okay, well, I don't want this guy to be.
Yeah, there's eight other guys in the lineup. I'm not going to pitch to this guy that's crushing it.
Yeah, the A's aren't bad either. Like, they're all, especially their offense.
They started the season pretty damn well.
I mean, you go a little Lawrence Butler, Jacob Wilson. You got Brent Rooker there in the middle of the order.
Yep.
Their offense isn't a layover. Like, their pitching stinks, but their offense is okay. Hank Aaron's 15th best season stats are good enough to win MVP in two-thirds of the last 12 seasons and finish no lower than third. See, foolish baseball. Yeah, that's fair. Why does Israel love Cam so much? I think because he's half white.
You're saying Israel's half white?
I don't know if Israel is. I know that Cam Smith is.
Well, you said that's why he seems to like Cam Smith so much.
Because Cam Smith is half white.
But that would seem to imply he identifies with him on that basis.
No, I just think he likes to root for guys down the middle. Okay. I think he likes. All right. He all like, right. I mean, all he's right. He's very fair.
He's very okay.
He's very fair with
fair
who,
and balanced
who
with
he roots
his,
for.
With roots for.
So he sees, you know, a half.
Shout
like,
out to Shedeur Sanders.
That's why he was such a big Tiger Woods fan.
Is he?
Yeah, Israel loves Tiger.
He loves Tiger. Okay.
He loves Tiger.
I think a lot of people love Tiger.
Would you extend Cam Smith? Is it too early?
Yeah, I would extend them. I mean, obviously, everything depends on the asking price, but I would certainly be willing to have the conversation with them. I'm not sure what my cutoff would be, but I'd have no qualms about trying to extend him through the first maybe 2 years of free agency.
Yeah, at least. I would have played hardball with him. I would have said, hey, Cam Smith, do you want to be on the big league team on opening day? Cool. Here's this team-friendly deal that you have to sign in order for that to happen.
Right.
I would have played the hardball with him. I have no problems signing Cam Smith. I have no problems doing it early. I'm a big fan of doing it early. Like, yeah, you're going to swing and miss occasionally, but it's worth it to me in the long run if you get to buy out years of club control. Well, John Singleton is the example of why you don't do it. Okay, well, Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman are reasons why you do it. Like, Alex Bregman went to free agency 2 years later
Jordan.
Because they signed him earlier. Jordan another. Jose Altuve, when he won the MVP, was on the team-friendliest MVP deal ever. So I'm in favor of signing players early if you trust your scout. Like, that's what GMs are paid for. GMs are paid for hitting on their scouts, evaluating players, and if you really think that Cam Smith's going to be an aircraft carrier, why wouldn't you lock him up and buy out his free agent years? Because if you do it early, it's cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, especially for a team that sometimes has some, I guess you would call it a little hesitant to go past the competitive balance tax. Like, why wouldn't you try to swing and take your best shot on locking up a guy on a deal that you couldn't get him at once he actually reaches a point where he'd have the choice in the open market?
Yeah. How about I'm there with Isak, too. And I know Isak still has, like, years of club control.
See,
and
Isak,
I know that he's a little bit older. But the reason that I want to do it with Isak is because I want to hold the meetings in the Crawford boxes. That way he signs any contract
right.
that he gives you. You can lowball Isak Paredes so much if you hold the negotiations in the Crawford boxes because he's never going to want to leave there.
See, I would be all for extending Isak. I think it's a great idea. But I was curious what Spotrac had to say about his market value. And I assume, obviously, his agent has seen some of these same things. And maybe it's far too optimistic. But they have his market value as 9 years, $236 million.
Sheesh.
So working out to 26.3 per year.
That's too much.
Exactly. So, like, I guess it depends. Like, right now, I don't think it's a great time to talk to Isak because he's been killing it. You might have to wait till he hits a cold stretch or something, which where the numbers level out over the full course of the year when water finds its level. But, like, right now, like, if the agent's looking at the same thing that Spotrac is looking at and thinking he can get that on the open market, why would he settle for some sort of team-friendly deal now?
Well, because he loves Minute Maid, or the Dyke, I should say. Latin players are a little bit more likely, actually a lot more likely,
to sign early
than non-Latin players. Now, the thing that does hurt you with Isak is that he is already in his arbitration years. So he is already getting, like, significant money.
He's not closer to the finish line.
Not free agent money, but he's getting right. he's making almost $7 million this year. Like, he's not hurting. Now, he doesn't hit free agency until after the 27 year, though. He's still got two more years after this year. It is probably too late with Isak because he is already in arbitration, and he's going to enter free agency at the age of 29, which is a pretty good year to enter free agency. But if he would be open to the idea of me buying out 2 to 3 years of his free agency, I would love that. What about Jeremy Pena?
Yeah, Pena would – I would be all for that. Now, Pena is – see, this is what, his fourth year in the league, so he's also now into those arbitration years. So you wonder if you've – I think you've probably missed the boat with Pena, but – I'd be for it. One of my other drawbacks would just be because he was a little bit of an older prospect, so I don't know how far out into the future I want to buy because he was a rookie at, what, age 24, almost 25? So, like, how far into his 30s are you buying out? But depending on the length of the deal, I would be interested.
Yeah, I think Payne is probably – I think that ship has sailed.
Probably.
Because you're right, he is an older free agent. He is also in his first arbitration year. He has two more years of arbitration. He'll be 30 when he's a free agent. Like, I have a difficult time, and especially paying you like son of a big leaguer. Like, I don't think that he's
not hurting.
Yeah, like I don't think he's in a spot where he's like, I must get money now and, you know, be able to, you know, send money back home and stuff like that. Hunter Brown, Astros Future came out with like a projected salary and kind of got crushed for the projected salary. He projected 5 years, $105 million.
I think that's too low for what Hunter Brown
would get. The thing is that he's still under club control for quite a while.
Well, his
5 years,
year,
you're buying 2 years of free agency.
This will be his third year.
He's still got 3 years after this.
Yeah. So I think that number's too low. If I'm Hunter Brown's agent and I look at 5 years, 105, I wouldn't even get me to reply to the email at that point. I think that's far too low for his agent to take seriously. The other part of it from the Astros side of it is, look, if you can get 5 years, 105, sure. But if you're looking at numbers that are more realistic, I'm just totally against locking up pitchers long term. This is really more of a, and this is not just a Christian Javier thing to me. You know, that's random. But when you look at the overall body of work with starting pitchers, not just Javier, they're getting injured at too frequent of a clip for me to want to lock a guy up for potentially what, 3 more years plus a couple of years into his free agency, maybe like a 6-year deal. I'd be out on that.
Yeah, I don't love long term extensions. Now the 5 years I wouldn't mind because it's only the 2 years of free agency. Garrett Crochet, who I think is a year ahead of Hunter Brown in terms of, like, contract stuff, he signed a 6-year, $170 million deal.
So
I think that's more
year.
I think that's more accurate than, like, 5-110.
Yeah, so 5-110, that would be, what, 22 per year, whereas Garrett got 28. Yeah, I think you're talking 25 per year is your starting point with
and
Hunter Brown.
I think for 6 years at least.
Yeah, because, I mean, otherwise – I mean, because you always have to ask yourself, like, why would the other guy say yes in this situation? If you're Hunter Brown, why would you shortchange yourself where you know that once you got to that part, like Garrett Crochet did on an open market situation?
Well, you get a raise for the next 3 years.
I guess it's how much of a raise do you get over what you'd make now versus what you'd be sacrificing for the future? That's what you got away.
If I'm Hunter Brown, I'm not signing an extension.
And not unless you're scared of injury. That'd be the only reason for Hunter Brown's side for me to sign this.
And even then, it would have to be pretty catastrophic.
Yeah.
Even if he had, like, pitchers survive TJs now and still get plenty of money.
True.
So I.
Yeah, Verlander at age 39 still got like a $40 million per year?
Yeah, you don't think Hunter Brown would get at least a $20 million AAV coming off of TJ as
a
free agent? Yeah, absolutely would. If I'm in his situation, I wouldn't. And I don't think that he will. I don't even think he'll come close to doing it because he hired Scott Boras as his agent.
Yeah, I mean, the thing Astros fans will always point back to is Jose Altuve has Scott Boras also, but that's such a unique situation.
So did Lance.
And Lance took what certainly looks like now a team-friendly contract, even though obviously for 2 years he just ate that deal. But, I mean, pitchers of his talent on the open market would get way more than what Lance is getting. That's kind of the point. But, yeah, I wouldn't say it's 100% Scott Boras being his agent means it's completely over, but I would say most likely it is.
Yeah.
Especially given, you know, what the pitcher market is. I mean, Max Fried got $200 million.
It's crazy. I wonder if Fromber's going to get a Fried deal. Like, that's one thing I'm going to be watching.
$200 million?
Yeah. Because Fromber, I think, is a year older than Fried.
Yeah, and I would take Fromber's career over Fried. Fried's been hurt a couple times. He was on the Braves team that won the World Series, wasn't he? So I couldn't remember how he did in that World Series. But Fromber's obviously had some big-time postseason moments, especially 2021 and then the clincher in 2022. But I would lean Fromber, but I guess the age would play a factor if Fromber's a year older.
Go into the early extension negotiations with a lesson about the time value of money. There you go. Get money now because it's worth more now. Inflation, hashtag. Sign them early, yes, but you would have done that with no Major League Baseball experience. I would do that for players that I'm convicted will be special. If I'm the general manager and I feel like I have a once-in-a-generation, oh, my goodness, wow, talent, yeah, I would. Like, that's why you're a general manager.
Cam Smith falls into that to me.
Probably.
Well,
probably.
Numbers matter, length matters, but Cam Smith at least falls into the category of I'd have the conversation with them.
Like Ronald Acuna, whenever he came up, I think he got one like after his first year, if memory serves.
Didn't Michael Harris get one really soon too?
I think he was a couple. He was at least a year in the bigs, maybe more. But if you had like an Acuna type, or like this is a can't miss prospect. Yeah, I'm using it as an incentive for them to sign to get into the big leagues. I'm like, okay, here you go. Here's a 10-year deal, however many million. Now the one that backfired was the Tampa Bay shortstop that. Was Diddy and
Latin
Diddy?
Yes.
But also they got out of the contract because of that. Like that's voided. Like they don't owe him that money. So like it didn't really hurt them financially at all. But yeah, if I have what I think is a generational talent, can't miss prospect, yeah, I'm signing him before big league experience because that's whenever it's going to be the cheapest.
Well, especially since by necessity, because of when you're signing them and because of what you're getting them at with the lack of experience they have and kind of a prove it situation, you're going to get them at what would be considered a value to the market. So even if you miss on it, it's not like you're paying what you would be paying. Like, if you want to take shots, I'd much rather take shots on guys getting, you know, those rookie-type deals versus guys that have already gone past arbitration and have hit the open market. Like, those shots are way more expensive than taking shots on guys like Cam Smith.
Texture says, Hunter Brown, I'm offering $13 to $15 million a year, earn your pay. Okay, well, that's cool. It's all fine and good.
he's going to laugh in your face and walk away.
I respect your opinion. You're entitled to your opinion, but Hunter Brown's going to be insulted and not accept the offer.
So, there's no way he'd take anything under 25 a year.
Yeah, like it takes two to tango. And that's the other thing. Like maybe you have a oh my goodness, can't miss, once in a generation, like this guy's going to be a stud. And they will not sign a contract early. Like we sometimes lose sight of both sides of it.
It's Springer didn't want to sign.
Yeah, sign Pena. Well, what if Pena doesn't want to? Well, sign Hunter Brown. Well, what if he doesn't want to? That's like the thing with trading guys too. Like, well, they traded Tucker. They should trade Fromber in the final year of his deal. Maybe they were listening to offers and they hated what they heard. Like, there's always the second domino that has to fall. Like, you
that
can have every intention
hard to believe
do it
to me though.
I'm convinced of it.
I know the case you're making makes total sense. I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of the other GMs taking the phone calls from Dana Brown and making like the negative argument against Fromber. Like, I mean,
well, there's maybe a lot of things that come into play.
I guess age would be the main thing I would say. Like, I don't want to do this because of age, and also because you'd have to pay him. He's up for a new contract.
Or what if you don't pay him and you only have him for a year, like Corbin Burns with Baltimore?
You don't think Baltimore would do that deal over again?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
I guess it depends on what you think of your team. Like, if you think you're, you know, the Yankees or whatever team you would want to put into the conversation, thinking they have a realistic shot to win a title, then I'd make that move.
Yeah.
Now maybe that limits your market because you could talk to fewer teams if you're only being able to talk to teams being willing to trade prospects for a 1 year shot because they think they're really close. But I still think those teams in that situation would have to look at Fromber and say, hell yes, sign me up.
I mean, there's a lot that comes into play. Salary, are you going to want to pay them? What kind of prospects are the Astros asking for? But Dana Brown in the winter meetings, like, we'll listen to offers for anybody. They traded Tucker like 2 weeks later. I think they were listening to offers from Fromber. Maybe their ask was too high because they hold Fromber in a high level, which is fair. Like, I do think they listened to offers for him, though.
I mean, they probably did, but I lean to the side, and we're all guessing here. But I lean more to the side of Jim Crane not willing to take that full step. Like,
maybe.
I don't think Jim Crane, maybe in part because of his comment of the window's always open, but I don't think he'd be willing to take the full step of trading Fromber also because of what that signifies of taking the team a step back.
He's also a big believer in pitching, so like that would be an argument for your side as well. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Who are you sending down when Jordan is activated? Also, look, it's time to promote for Shea Whitcomb. Yeah, he's a 4A player, but it's time to promote for Shea. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights.
Drift Bar, your LSU headquarters. Everything LSU, alumni parties, LSU watch parties. This is a spot, the official LSU headquarters in the city of Houston. Great happy hour spot, 8 p.m. happy hour, 2 to 8 on Fridays. Karaoke coming up tonight at 9, karaoke tomorrow as well. It's a great spot. Brian had what'd you call that? A bucket of
Bacardi?
It was Bacardi?
A bucket of, what was this thing here?
Bucket of Bacardi.
Dragon Rum Punch Bucket, yeah.
Very good.
So good that I forgot a name.
The mixologists here are very talented. Very talented. A lot of games you can play. Guitar Hero, Cut to Win, Pool Tables, Buck Hunter, Duck Locker, Claw Game. Got to be careful saying those. Two basketball games, the little Papa Shot things. DJ Captain Kevlar tonight, DJ Bobby Moe tomorrow. Crawfish, Best in the Heights right here as well at Drift in the Heights. Brian in for last hour or so for Blankers. Blankers went to his daughter's graduation. So Shea Whitcomb's on fire. And he's 4A Shea. Like, he's 4 Shea. I don't think that Shea Whitcomb is going to be, like, a stud. I don't think he's even going to be – I don't think Shea Whitcomb projects as a positive starter on a good baseball team? Like, could he start for bad baseball team? Probably. But on a good winning team, I think he's a utility player. And now his defense ain't great, which hurts him a little bit, but he is capable of playing every position except for, like, center and catcher. He can give you innings at shortstop. Not going to get great defense there, but can give you innings at shortstop. It's time to call up for Shea Whitcomb. Like, whoa. Call him up and start? Where is he? No. He's just going to take a bench spot. But he can give you at least equal production to what Brendan Rodgers is giving you. Probably better, but let's go with at least the offensive production that Brendan Rodgers is giving you. And then he gives you more than what Brendan Rodgers offers you in flexibility, because at least he can play every defensive position. Yeah, he's not going to play it well. Okay, well, you can hide him at times. He needs to play at second base to give some guys some days off, or you're looking for some offense there. Okay, we'll play him at second base behind the fly ball pitchers. Jeremy Pena is going to need a day off every now and then, and I know you have Dubon, but maybe Dubon's playing so well that he needs to start either at second or short. That opens up second or short for Shea Whitcomb. I'm of the belief that Shea Whitcomb's a better offensive player at baseball right now today than Brendan Rodgers is. And even though he's not a great defender, he can be a backup to a bunch of different infield positions. I think he adds more value to the big league club than Brendan Rodgers. And, yes, we're talking about a bench spot, but he makes the team better slightly.
And look, I think the teams like the Astros, who aren't willing to spend like the Dodgers, sometimes have to win on the margins. And I think Brendan Rodgers and replacing Brendan Rodgers with Shea Whitcomb is one of those margins. Like, I agree with you. I don't think he's going to come up and slug like he does in the minors. I think it's 17 home runs right now through the early part of the AAA season. I mean, no way that power remains the same. Otherwise, he'd force himself into a starting role. But like you said, he offers you more than just second base defensively. And, I mean, stick with just the offensive side. I feel like setting the bar pretty low if we're saying, well, he could be better offensively than Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers, OPS plus of 52.
Yeah.
I mean, Dubon, who we view as a below-average offensive player, is in the 80s. Chaz McCormick, a below-average offensive player, is in the 80s. I mean, Brendan Rodgers is 30 points below them. 52 OPS plus. He's a horrible offensive player. And he offers you only one position defensively. I'd much rather have Shea Whitcomb, not only because of his versatility, but not only because he can't do worse than Brendan Rodgers, but there is, albeit a very small chance, there is a very small chance that he provides you some upside because of the power he's shown in AAA.
Texture says Brendan is in it for the long run. Stop it. Why?
Why?
Like, why is Brendan Rodgers on this club for the long run? Now, I will say this, to defend the Texture, and to also, I guess, argue against myself is, like, the reality that it's not going to happen. Brendan Rodgers isn't making a lot of money. I think he's on a $2 million salary for the year. But it's a really bad look for Dana Brown to commit to paying him for the rest of the year 2 weeks ago and then cutting him 2 weeks later. That's why I don't think it will happen. Huh. Dana needed to do this 2 weeks ago, because it's really hard to go to Jim Crane and be like, hey, can we just cut this $2 million because we're going to call up Shea Whitcomb to take his spot, whenever you could have done that 2 weeks ago and save Jim Crane $2 million. So for that reason alone is why realistically it will not happen, but I do think it's better for Joe Espada for it to happen.
Unfortunately, I think your hypothesis there is probably true, but to me, that's a really, I mean, I get it'd be a bad look to cut a guy when you're still going to have to pay him anyway, but I think it's even a worse look to keep running out a guy with an OPS plus of 52.
Yeah.
Just to not, quote unquote, like, you're putting egg on your face by playing a terrible offensive player to prevent putting egg on your face from cutting a terrible offensive player. Like, either way, you look bad. Just get the worst offensive player off your team and play the better one.
It's just real hard to go, and, hey, Mr. Crane, I know 2 weeks ago I said we needed to keep this $2 million player on our team, and then 2 weeks down the road you're like, hey, Mr. Crane, I was wrong about that. Could you mind eating the $2 million because we want this backup infielder? And, again, like, it's not a premium spot on the roster. We're talking about a backup bench guy.
Yeah, that guy that plays that isn't once good a week.
Yeah, that isn't great defensively. That is also right-handed, so he's probably not going to even pinch hit for you. Like, if he was left-handed, I think it would have already been done. If he was left-handed, you might not ever sign Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah,
certainly possible. Doesn't live past the cut. But because he's right-handed, doesn't play great defense, and you've already committed and you're past the $2 million deadline 2 weeks ago, I think Dana Brown already shot himself in the foot there. Maybe should have done it 2 weeks ago. 713-780-ESPN. What is the who are you sending down when Jordan's activated?
I think TK nailed it earlier, and if you missed that interview with Todd Callis, your TV voice of the Astros, go and check it out on the podcast page. But I think you're sending down Caesar Salad. I mean, the whole reason, as TK pointed out, for bringing him up was because you need an extra DH option with Yordan Alvarez unavailable. But now that obviously your DH every night should be, unless somebody gets hurt, is Altuve or Yordan. To me, I don't see the reason for a third catcher if Yordan and Altuve are both healthy. So I would send down Cesar Salas.
There is some thought that Salas not. I shouldn't say thought. There's more conversation, not within the Astros, but fans of the Astros, that you keep Salazar because Caratini's been playing so well, and you try to give him some at-bats somewhere, so that the importance of a third catcher, I guess, is magnified because of that. But if you really start to think of, so he's splitting time with Yiner. One of them is not catching if they're splitting time. Christian Walker's back today, so his finger is not going to, be a lingering issue, hopefully. Hitting a little bit better. So how many starts are available at first base? Caratini and Yiner can't play any other positions. They could DH, but that means that Yordan's not DHing. And then you still try to find Jose Altuve some at-bats at DH as well.
Right.
I don't think it's realistic for Caratini and Yiner to play a lot on the same day. Now, whether it's a timeshare, 50-50 split, straight platoon, stuff like that could come into play. But the likelihood of both of them playing in the same starting nine multiple times a week, if everybody's healthy, I think is very, very slim. So I think the idea of Salazar is right. If you are thinking, okay, I'm going to try to find my best way to get Caratini and Yiner in the lineup and as often as I can, pinch hitting, things like that, then it makes sense to keep Salazar. And if you do go that route, not that I'm disagreeing, but just for the sake of the conversation, I think it's DiCenzo instead of Chaz. Like, DiCenzo, to me, needs to be playing almost every day. And right now he's not playing almost every day because of the emergence of Cam Smith. Jake's been doing really well. If Yordan comes back, that means Altuve's playing left field. If Yordan plays the field, it's going to be left field. So the at-bats for DiCenzo would go down once Yordan comes back. So Salazar, I think, is the obvious answer. If it's not Salazar, I would go with DiCenzo.
I mean, that's definitely a fair argument of DiCenzo needing to play every day. I would just choose the better offensive player of the two, which to me is DiCenzo. And like you, the picture you painted there, like, I don't see, other than just the random maybe Sunday day off for a dusty day off for some of the veterans, I don't see a way where you get both Yiner and Caratini in the lineup on the same day. Like, what would be the, like, because you're not taking – you're not taking Altuve or Yordan out of the lineup unless they're like a dusty day off, and one of those guys is going to be playing DH. I mean, and unless again Christian Walker is at first, so you would have nowhere to play that guy.
I also think that we overrate. I think that we overrate the needing a third catcher because both guys are in the lineup. As long as one of them is not the DH, you're fine.
Right.
Because, okay, if Caratini played first yesterday without Walker, Yiner catches. Okay, Yiner gets hurt. What do you do? Well, you just move Caratini to catcher, and you play somebody first. Well, now what if both catchers get hurt? How often have you seen two catchers get hurt in a game? And if it does happen, it's one game in 162.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the end of the world.
No, I agree. I mean, I sometimes think about that the same way I think about teams carrying, like, a third quarterback on the roster, and they're like, well, what if the second quarterback gets hurt? Well, you're screwed anyway.
Yeah.
So just live with it and move on. Like, I don't by going to that extra guy, I don't really think you're making. I would rather have a bat on my 26 man roster that can play. I don't know how many days a week you would say, but more often than you're talking about with Salazar maybe playing one day a week.
Yeah, he wasn't even playing one day a week. Like, he was with the club for 3 weeks and didn't play at all.
I mean, okay, so even, like, one day a week is optimistic. Why would you choose that option over a guy who could play?
Well, it's the emergency. It's the backup plan in case those guys get hurt.
I mean, I'm agreeing with you, though. Like, how often do you see two catchers get hurt in the same game?
Texture, they were literally in the lineup together yesterday, and you just never know what might happen. Well, Walker was hurt.
Right.
That's the reason they were both in the lineup. And then Yordan's also hurt. So if Yordan comes back and then Walker is back, how are both of those guys getting in the same lineup? And if you are going to do that once or twice a week, which I think is hard to do, why are you keeping a third catcher in that rare occurrence where they're both going to be in the lineup once or twice a week? And then also on the rare occurrence, they would both have to get hurt in the same game for the need of a third catcher to ever come and play. Now, the one thing I would push back with DiCenzo is, like, he needs to be playing. And if it's not with the big league club, it should be a AAA.
Yeah, I just think the idea of keeping Salazar on the roster is playing to a worst-case scenario that's so rare that it's not worth sacrificing the better bat for.
Yeah, Yeah, I just don't think DeZinzo will play much either, though. Let's say both catchers get hurt. Who's going behind the plate? How often have you seen two catchers get hurt in one game? And if it does happen, it's one game of 162. Who cares?
Talking about the playoffs.
Who would be the emergency catcher? It used to be Greg Kessinger. I would guess it would be Dubon.
I could see
that. Kind of like jack of all trades, utility guy. My guess is it would be Dubon.
Who would you least want catching?
Yordan.
Yeah, obviously answer Yordan.
Yordan's the answer there.
We're moving Altuve to left field. Let's let him play catcher.
So the texter said Altuve,
right? Yeah, complete the Craig Biggio career arc.
No. I want my least important player and be my third catcher.
Yeah, Alex Dubon's a good answer.
Salazar can be the seventh inning pitcher. It was weird. Yesterday the Astros gave up, 11 runs in their bullpen? And the Cesar Salazar was the one who didn't.
Yeah. Brian King gives up, 5 runs? Yeah. Salazar gives up nothing.
Didn't give up a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Cy Salazar.
All right, these college conferences are annoying me. I have a thought or two about it. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees live from Drift in the Heights on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
It's the Killer Bees, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh, my goodness, would you look at this. What an enormous bit.
It's time for Buzzkill Branham.
Love drifting the heights, vibes are great. Sometimes even the vibes can contain Buzzkill Branham. But if you are looking for a happy hour until 8 on this very beautiful Friday, this is the spot. You're looking for karaoke tonight at Drift Bar in the Heights. LSU headquarters, great spot. Love coming out here each and every time we do. These conference commissioners are annoying to me. The SEC, they want this, they want that. Big Ten staying quiet because they don't want to speak up. Big 12 will say a thing or two. ACC, I haven't really heard much from whoever the ACC commissioner is. I do care what the result ends up to. Like, I do want the 5 conference champions or whatever, plus 11, 16-team playoff. That would be my route. I don't like the 4-4, 2-2, 1-3 at-large teams. I do want 4 Power 4 conference champions, one from the group of 5 or 6 or whatever it is these days, and then I want the rest of them to be at-larges, the 11. So ultimately, I do want that. What I am sick of, though, is this little politicking, bickering, back and forth, the negotiation, all of that, the negotiation through the media, the griping through the media. I can do without it. I'm done with it. I'm not going to even pay attention. I'm not going to click these articles. I'm not going to listen at all. Whenever it is final is whenever I will care. I'm not going to get worked up about all the public negotiation that is going on right now with these college commissioners.
Yeah, especially since there was some bickering this last week with Greg Sankey, and who runs the SEC, and the Big 12 commissioner about, like, who's voting on the side of what's best for the sport versus voting on what's the best for their individual conference. It feels like a lot of people just want to put themselves on the soapbox and, like, take the slings and arrows as the martyr for college football, that they're doing the best. Okay, great. We all know everyone's looking out for number one. Commissioners aren't exempt for that. You're looking out for your conference interests. You're not floating out the idea of having 4 automatic bids if you're only looking out for what's best for the sport. You're trying to do what's best for the SEC, and you should. I don't blame you for that, but I agree with you. Like, I'm tired of hearing the back and forth. Don't tell me what you put in the hot dog. Just tell me what you come out with when the product is done.
Like, one day it's A, the next day it's B, then they all argue, and now it's A and B and C. I'm not going to pay attention to it.
Especially since, don't we know how this is probably going to end? I mean, the SEC and the Big
What's
Ten
your are guess?
I think the SEC and Big Ten probably get their way. And this is what I mentioned in our conversation earlier. Like, I think there will be some sort of initial given. Maybe they settle on 3 instead of 4. Or maybe they throw in the caveat, well, if the SEC or the Big Ten just happens to have a down year and they don't have 4 ranked teams, then that spot reverts to an at-large bid. But there may be some sort of give along those lines. But ultimately, the SEC and Big Ten will get their guarantee.
The SEC coaches want the 5 and 11, 5 plus 11. Without the 4-4-2-2-1, whatever.
I mean, that's nice, but I think the commissioner wants the money that comes from getting teams in.
See, he's still going to get 4. He's still going to get more than 4.
I know, that's why completely rehash the argument we had the other day, but I think that's part of why the hand-wringing over this has been a little overblown, because the result of this, whether you have the guarantees or you don't, the result of this is probably still four from each of the Big Ten and the SEC get in regardless. But, I mean, if I'm running the SEC, I'm going to look out for number one. And looking out for number one is trying to get the most guarantees possible. So I don't blame them. But I think we're going to end up with the SEC and the Big Ten largely getting what they want.
I think we're going to end up with a 5-11.
Really?
I do.
What power would the Big 12 and the ACC wield to push the SEC and Big Ten that way?
Well, I think the SEC doesn't really care. I don't think the SEC cares about the four AQs. I think the SEC...
Where does that come from, then?
What do you mean?
Like, if they don't care about it, why is that floated out as what they want to do?
Well, I think initially, I think the Big Ten wants it.
Okay, you think it's a Big Ten thing. Okay.
And then the Big Ten's kind of just staying quiet, letting Sankey kind of do all the conversation. They're, like, kind of sitting in the back, like, hey, I hope this 4-4 thing goes in. But then Sankey's like, yeah, you know, kind of, it seems like, based on what I read, I'm going to stop reading. It seems like he's more open to the idea of 5-11 because he knows he's still going to get X amount of teams
regardless. He's still going to get four.
Yeah.
Hell, he might even get more than that.
Like, it isn't necessarily a guarantee or might. It might even be less than a guarantee that this is good for the Big 12 and the ACC. Like, the Big 12 and the ACC might be better off with the two automatic bids and then fighting the other teams for the three at-larges.
I think they would.
Like,
yeah.
That might be better for the Big 12 and the ACC than the 5 and the 11.
Like, I had that conversation on the bullpen this last week, and, like, what's more likely, the Big 10 and SEC not having four teams? Like, if you just went completely – you know, conference champions plus 11 at large. What's less likely, the Big Ten and the SEC failing to have four teams or the Big 12 and ACC failing to have two?
The latter.
Yeah. So I agree that it, as much as sometimes I think it's been presented as the Big 12 is fighting against this, the ACC is fighting against this because it should just be best team available. I think it actually kind of benefits them.
To
lock in two teams.
Yeah, I think that's why Sankey ultimately is not going to care. Is that Sankey like realizes, okay, 5-11 is fine. The reason that I want 5-11 is I think that it makes more sense. I don't like the idea of like, okay, we're watching these conference races with two games left in the conference slate. Who's going to get fourth place to get the automatic qualifier? I think that's a dumb way to like take in the season.
Yeah.
Fight for a conference title. Get the automatic berth. If you don't get the automatic berth, then you're at the – however they're going to do the at-large system. I saw Sankey had some ideas with that were different than, like, a committee as well, which I'm okay with. I would turn it over into a computer so there's not, like, personal bias.
Well, like BCS days?
Yeah, and if you need to, like, tinker the numbers to make it more up-to-date, whatever you got to do. I don't like the personal bias involved because then you throw in, like, well, is Bubba Cunningham putting North Carolina in the NCAA tournament because he gets a $500,000
right.
bonus for them being in there? Like, that needs to be eliminated. I don't like the human element of that. But – I just think that it makes more sense from a viewing point of view. Like, okay, you're fighting for a conference title, automatic berth. And then you have your race, if you're not a conference champion, for the 11 at-large spots. I don't like the, okay, well, it's like Champions League. It's like European soccer. Well, if I get the fourth spot, I get promotion into the – I can play in the Champions League. I don't like that.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think it does provide for a better TV product in that it's – like, I think we're – no matter what side of this it ends up on, I think we're kind of getting the same result as far as what teams get in. But I think it just makes it, I mean, obviously more fair, and also obviously I think it makes it a better, like, week-to-week conversation on shows like this of who deserves to be in. Then as well, okay, I mean, they're top four in the SEC, so they're in. So, like, there's no
right.
conversation there.
I don't like that.
There's no intrigue. It's just they're in.
Yeah, I don't
Whereas
like...
if there's 11 at large, there's a lot of conversation intrigue.
Here's the race for fourth place in the big – I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that. No, okay, here's a team that's trying to boost their resume to see if they stack up and get an at-large spot. And
what plus, if we just did flat two for all four of the big conferences?
No. No. I don't want to guarantee a runner-up to be in. No.
I'm just trying to think of a –
No, give me 5-11. 5-11 is so perfect.
I agree, but somebody's pushing for this. I'm trying to think of where
I think it's the Big Ten.
Yeah, it might be. I'm trying to think of where the happy medium is. If it was a flat two, I could live with that.
I don't like that. Runner-up. Kissing sisters. Like, it's just – well, that's what they do in the SEC anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
713-780-ESPN. Let's get to our car wreck of the day. What do you nominate for car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. You prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Thank you so much, Drift in the Heights, for having us out today. Great spot. Always love coming out here. Get fantastic drinks. Happy hour until 8. Karaoke coming up tonight at 9 o'clock with DJ Captain Kevlar. DJ Bobby Moe tomorrow from 9 to 2. Great spot for your crawfish. A bunch of games, bar games, punch prizes. They have the pool tables. Lots of guitar heroes over there. You strike me as a guitar hero kind of guy.
You're not wrong. I play guitar hero. I just want more excuses for that, for you to have to say DJ Captain Kevlar.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. Just it doesn't come off with a lot of street cred.
Yeah, I have a lot of swag. You know nothing. viral comedy show every Wednesday too, from 8 to 11. Wrap around patio. They have frozen drinks. They have great drinks. I mentioned happy hour weekdays until 8. Food trucks out here. Best crawfish in the Heights. 31 TVs outside. 2 large outdoor screens. 27 TVs inside with big sound. Daily specials. It's where the Southern Coast meets the true Texas Ice House. And for your LSU Tigers, they are the headquarters of all things LSU. The official alumni spot of the LSU.
Sound like the head
Tigers.
Coach there.
Every day is a sunny day at Alex Box Stadium. Hmm. They had rain delay today.
Oh, okay.
But they say that before every game. 713-780-ESPN. What are you nominating for Car Wreck of the Day, Brian?
I've got two. One quickly is a self-report. It happened off the air. But I got the name wrong of our great promotions person here. I called her Veronica when her name's Victoria. And she's very mad at me. She's still glaring
at me. She
said
it's Vanessa.
No, it's not Vanessa. Don't try to see. I already. Okay. My head's already buzzing as it is, not because of the great drinks here. Yeah. It's just been a long week. But, don't throw me off and tell me it's Vanessa. It's Victoria, but I called her Veronica. So self-report.
Technically, I called her.
The day, yeah.
Technically,
yeah.
I called her Veronica.
You did.
Because I said, what's her name? And you said Veronica.
And it was not Veronica.
Which I should know her name, too. Now, yeah. to be fair to me, I don't know interns' names. But to be fair to
she's
Victoria,
intern,
she's
though.
No longer
she's
an intern.
She's not an intern, yeah.
So that is my bad.
So, Car Wreck of the Day nomination for myself. The other one comes from the Paul Gallant Show, which AJ was here for this moment. I heard it on the way in. Paul was talking about New York Knicks fan celebrities. He thought a certain actor should be the New York Knicks representative instead of Spike Lee. Only problem was he can't pronounce the guy's name.
The famous Knicks fan. Timothy Chalamet, I don't know how to say his last name. Timothy, whatever his last name is, who is fun, he's cooler. He seems like a real Knicks fan, and he's also not an insufferable blowhard that's wearing clown clothes to the courtside situation. Like, I don't get it. Now, and I only just found out that Timothy whatever it is. I'm sorry. I love him. Dude 2 was great. Don't hate me. I truly – is it Chalamet?
Timothy Chalamet.
You know where you know what happened here?
What's that?
And I know this because I've made this mistake a million times. Is that whenever you know a name, but then when you see it spelled,
you're it messes like, with your head.
It looks different than how it's pronounced.
Yeah.
So I bet you that if he was sitting here at Drift Bar talking to probably a lady he finds, he would be able to like, hey, Timothy Chalamet. Like, he would have no problem. But the moment he looks at his notes and he says Timothy and it's like, Chalamet? What? And he kind of, like, you psych yourself out in the moment, bright lights. I think that's what happened here.
I don't think Paul ever melts.
He knows
under
who
the
Timothy. He knows who Timothy. But he looked at the way it was spelled, and it
maybe
looked funny.
Maybe so. It was like three different pronunciations. And a few minutes later, he eventually got it right. But yeah, that was a fun moment.
I did it with Jay Billis that one time.
What'd you call him?
Bilas.
Bilas.
Yeah, because like I know it's Jay Billis.
To him?
No.
Okay.
We were talking. Like, I can't remember what we were talking about, but he was in the I don't remember. Like, he came up. And I had it, like, his name written down. Like, if I, like, you and I talk and I don't have his name written down anywhere, Jay Billis.
Right.
But the moment I saw it, Jay Billis. So, like, I understand. And I mispronounce words all the time. Donna wants to nominate Blankers for shooting a napkin in her beer. To Blankers' credit, it was a long shot.
It was a pretty
well
impressive
done.
Shot.
It was. Yeah. But Donna was not happy.
That's fair.
So that gets a nomination. Tigers groundskeeper was hurt while tending to the field, and then he flipped off the camera that was shooting him because he was, like, embarrassed. And then did you see Greg Doyle was asking Pascal Siakam stuff?
I heard that it was embarrassing. I didn't see what that
Now, you couldn't hear what he was saying, so it's not worth playing the audio, but this was the same guy that was banned for covering the fever because of
the
weird
Caitlin
questions
Clark,
to Caitlin Clark. All right, what's winning?
I'm gonna go with myself for getting our promotion person's name
that's pretty
wrong.
Good. Israel Car Wreck of the Day says a texture. Car Wreck of the Day, the guy that parks on your road. That's creepy. I did park on my road last night, too, for reasons I don't want to discuss. I wonder if he's talking about me. Which is creepy.
You have a follower.
That's creepy.
You have a follower.
Yeah, but you win for mispronouncing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not knowing Victoria's name. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Brian. Thanks for everybody coming out. Thanks to Ryan and Age back at the studio. Thanks to Victoria for being a good sport. Coming up at 7 tonight, Smoking and Toasted. Keep it here for that. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.